Accession number 17733, reel 3.
Mr. Tudor, reel 3. You were saying that was the reason you turned back, and that was actually the date of that was 12th of May, 1943. And then you've put the places you raided in the Halifax were Bochum, Dortmund, Dusseldorf and Essen during May. That's all the Ruhr.
Exactly.
How did you feel about going to the Ruhr?
The Ruhr was a very, very hard target. It was, they used to call that aircraft, they called the Happy Valley. A lot of our aircraft were shut down bombing these targets. They were very well, they were very good reinforced on with anti-aircraft guns and searchlights round the Ruhr. So we didn't really look forward to going to the Ruhr at all.
Were there groans in the briefing when you discovered it was the Ruhr?
Not really, no. Just as far as I can say, we just carried on, you know, just that way. We knew it had to be done, and we went, that's it.
What were the defences like in the Ruhr?
They were like cities and towns of steel, searchlights all round, anti-aircraft guns everywhere. Fighters floating about. We're glad to get in there and get out.
Did you have any night fighters which attacked you on these raids in May 1943?
No, we didn't. No.
And then, did you stay on that squadron, or were you transferred?
Well, after completing five operations on 158 Squadron, we were transferred or volunteered or picked for Pathfinder Force.
How did it come about that you were picked for Pathfinders?
Well, I should imagine Mr. Thought we were a bit exceptional. I'd like to think that. Don Bennett, who was the commander of Pathfinder's force, he had a chapter come round the squadrons and supposed to pick the best crews out and ask them would they like to come on Pathfinder's. Now, the main difference between Pathfinder Force and Bomber Command is on Bomber Command, you completed, if you're lucky, 30 bombing operations and you went for a rest. As an instructor say to an OTU. Now, in Pathfinder Force, you have to complete 45 operations on the trot, and you finish for good in the European Theatre of War. If the Japan War went on, obviously you'd be sent back there, you know. So we volunteered. The pilot met us all. We had a meeting over this, and he said, what do you think? He'd always do this. He wouldn't say things on his own bat. You get all the crew involved, and we decided we'd go on to Pathfinder Force. So we posted to 35 Squadron, RAF Gravely, Hongingham, which is 8 Group Pathfinder Force.
What were they flying?
They were flying the same aircraft, Halifaxes.
Did the setup at Gravely seem to be much different from Lissa?
The setup at Gravely was. You'd done more training at Gravely. Well, you'd done Pathfinder Force. And you went on a special course at Gravely. Once again, went on a bit of a course.
Can you remember what happened on the course?
Well, you'd done more wireless transmitting, receiving. The navigators were really mostly for, because it was like a navigator's training unit as well. And you all done special training. We've done plenty of flying at night, bombing Liverpool and Coventry, as an example. We used to do this on an operational squadron. It was never heard of before, you see. But you had to do it. You know, you were trained up to the mark.
And you were an 8 group?
8 group.
Were the Halifaxes any better with this squadron?
No, the same type of Halifax. Just the same. It's good. Very good. I've done most of my operations on Halifaxes. But whilst on A Group, we transferred near the end of the war onto Lancasters. And I've done my last, say, five trips on Lancaster bombers.
I think your first operation with 35 Squadron was to Le Creuser.
Yes.
What happened on that raid?
Very quiet there, if I remember rightly.
And then you were in the Rhineland again for quite a lot. Do you remember any of those raids to Wuppertal and Cologne and so on?
Well, Cologne was a very, very hard target. Bags of anti-aircraft guns and searchlights, etc., etc.
Any of these raids that stick out in your mind from your early days with Halifaxes in 35 Squadron?
No, not really. No, they were all, no. It's when I come to the latter end, when I'm nearly finishing my tour, we had problems.
What were the problems?
Well, definitely. Well, in Pathfinder Force, you have to do 45 trips on the trot. Now, as everyone knows in the RDF, really, actually, anyway, that the pilot of a plane always has a trip in hand of the rest of the crew. Because the pilot goes as a second dicky on his first mission, and that is counted as one trip. So we had to do 45. I went sick on three trips, so I missed four shifts with my pilot, Danny Everett. So that meant when Danny had finished, I had four or five to do. So I had to go a spare with different pilots. Danny volunteered to carry on and finish me off. And the bomb aimer, he'd done the same as me. He'd about four behind. And what happened then was, I waited quite a time before I met with a different pilot. And even a different crew, different pilots. It's a different ball game when you go with a different crew, different pilots, different ball game altogether. And when it comes to my last trip, I'd put in for 14 days leave. My passport signed. I was due to go on leave that night. That would be the 22nd of May, 44. Later on in the afternoon, on this stage, Danny the pilot came to me and said, "Frank, there's a trip going tonight. Would you like to do it? To finish you off." "As do as it with?" "Yes, obviously." "Flight Lieutenant Holmes, good pilot. DFC, yeah?" "I said, sure." Didn't go on leave, did I? I went on this last trip with Flight Lieutenant Holmes. The trip was Dortmund. It'd be my 51st trip. And we shut down coming back, didn't we, from Dortmund. And in actual fact, when I was shut down, I could have been on leave.
We come on to how you were shot down in a
minute.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
But if I could just ask you about some of the things in your logbook, which strike me. You said that there was a trip to Berlin in which you were shot up by fighters, and you give the date in your logbook, 23rd of August 1943.
43.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure. I was a Wallace operation, wasn't I? But apparently we were attacked by two night fighters, according to the gunner. I'm only going back with the gunners and the crew. We were shot up by these night fighters, and all the gunners gave the pilots. Information. I went to turn into the attack. Because you always turn into an attack, you never turn away. And luckily we got out of this one. They just peeled off and we were left there, still flying home. The pilot done all his, maneuverability, etc., etc. So it didn't affect us really that much,
What damage was done to the Halifax?
Hardly any. Hardly any.
Did you see the fighters yourself?
I didn't, no. No, no, no.
Did you prefer being in Pathfinder Force or not?
I did. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I did. I enjoyed it.
Why was that?
Pardon?
Why was that?
Well, you were with a good crew. They had extra training. They were well equipped for the range we were doing.
Did you feel yourself to be in the elite?
In a way, yes. In a way, yes. Yes. But you wouldn't show it, obviously, you know. But you thought that. I think you did, yeah.
Was there any resentment towards you from non-Pathfinder people?
No, not really, no. I think most of them appreciated it. I go for a drink with one or two of them now, and one on Bala Command, and he always said he'd love to be in Pathfinders. He said I was lucky.
What were raids on Berlin like?
They were fairly easy. No, to my way of thinking, they were fairly easy, you know, to long raids, obviously, longer distance, further distance, but they went to bad Berlin raids. I think I know about six on Berlin raids.
There's one Berlin raid here that you mentioned, I think it's the 23rd of December 1943, Halifax raid, in which you say your port outer was hit.
Yes.
Was that by flak?
It was, but yes, it was. It must have been by flak, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that?
Not really, no, no.
What kind of height were you in the Pathfinders as opposed to the previous squadron?
Same height. No difference in the height.
And you also have put down here a mine laying operation. What were mine laying operations like?
They were quite easy, really, mine laying. You just, you know, there's nothing to fire back at you, really, unless you met a fighter or something on the way, you know. No, they were fairly easy raids.
You converted from Halifax's onto Lancaster's in about February 1944.
That's right.
Do you remember the converting from the one to the other?
Yes, well, you had a bit of training on them, obviously, before, you know, before it went on the raid. But I found the Lancaster was a good plane. It was faster, bigger bomb load, more height. You get more height with the Lancaster than the Halifax, but more manoeuvrable Lancaster. But the Halifax seemed to be more steadier.
Now, you've already told me quite a bit about this raid on which you got shot down.
Yes.
This is the 22nd of May 1944.
44.
Can you take me through it in detail, as much as you can remember about how it all happened?
Yes, sure, sure. We took off a 22-47, 22nd of May 1944. I was flying with a complete strange crew. I didn't even know them, but that way.
You've already explained earlier why that was.
We had no problems getting to the target, which was Dortmund. We bombed Dortmund and on returning to base over Holland, I was transmitting a message back to group concerning the wind, strength of the wind. So I would not be in with the crew talking, or the pilot, but if I'm transmitting a Morse message, the crew is shut off. I shut them off from me while I'm transmitting the message. While transmitting this message, I heard two big thuds in front of the aircraft. And maps kept flying past me. Just maps come flying. I finished my message to group and put on an SOS at the end of the message. At this stage, you didn't know what it was going to do. Now I know it was no good, obviously, but I didn't know what was going to happen after. Sent an SOS. I looked at the navigator who was sitting in front of me by the table. He was getting up to his feet, taking his helmet off. I switched the intercom immediately over so I could hear the crew, someone talking, was dead. No, nothing came through. Obviously, he'd been shot away. On this trip, this being my last trip, should have been, I must have had a premonition because the parachute was placed at the bottom by my feet. Normally, in my own crew, I leave it at the back of the plane, the parachute. So as I stood up, as the navigator removed his helmet, etc., I removed mine, went my parachute down by my feet, placed it on my harness, stood up, put my hand on the ripcord. If you don't have your hand on the ripcord, if you're going to bail out, the ripcord could catch something on the plane and pull a parachute. So we learned this in training, obviously. Hand on the ripcord, stood up. The next thing I remember, I was coming down in midair. Parachute was open. Blood streaming down my face. Just like a bird coming down. When I landed on a tree. I'd fractured my ankle, my left ankle. I managed to cut myself down, parachute, buried them to the best I could, and they may rest very bad. Sat there. I could see the plane burning in about 4 or 5 fields away from where I was. And people shouting over the foreign language. Because at this moment in time, I didn't know whether it was over Germany, Belgium, Holland, France, you don't know. The Royal Air Force is not in tune with where you are at any given moment in time. So I stayed there about half an hour after firing my parachute. Then I started hobbling. This was in the country. I started hobbling towards a farmhouse. I passed 2 or 3. I was going to look for the house with no telephone. But if they've got a telephone in a neutral country, they could be with the Germans, you see. So I looked for one, looked a bit rough. Knocked on the door. Chappy came out, elderly chap and his wife. Candle lit. As they opened the door, I fell in, kind of unconscious. When I came down, I have to say an hour, apparently. He had a son there, about 18 as well. He was there. Well, I got my maps out. And hit down here. Chest. Asked him where was I. Told him who I was, etc., etc. He said, Deutsch. Well, I thought he meant Deutsch, German. So I made sure, got my maps out again. They were saying Dutch. Dutch, Holland. I explained where I went. They told me where I was, showed me. So I immediately said to them, well, can you put me up? You know, fly a fleet. You know. No way, she said. And he said, no way. That in Dutch. They get shot, boom, boom. Well, I was losing blood, the hole in the head there. I fractured my ankle. So there's no way I could escape. So I said, you better give me up. So with that, the young lad of the house, he went out and came back with two German soldiers. I was taken from there to a convent. About 8 miles from the farmhouse. In the convent, two nuns came to me. Apparently they knew who I was. And they said to me, "You got a syringe?" I was really nervous at this stage. One of them said, one of them speaking, said, "I've got a syringe here. I'm going to take some blood from you. Squirt all over my cut on the top, this, whatever it was."
On your head?
On my head. And say, let the Germans think you're really hurt. They might leave you there longer and then they'd be able to escape. I was getting really worried, you know, getting, you know, things go through your mind. Have you done this? But half an hour later, the German soldiers come back and didn't work, took me away on the stretcher. I ended up in Amsterdam in the Hermann Göring Luftwaffe Hospital in Amsterdam.
What happened there?
He took me to the top room in the hospital, guards down the door, dogs, bayonets. And inside this ward was another, say, 8 RDF aircrew chaps, or supposed to be. They treated me fracture, treated me head. And from there, he took me to what you call dual glove for interrogation, which is in Frankfurt.
What did you think of the medical treatment you got in Amsterdam?
Not very good. One nurse who was treating me, cutting my head, was cleaning the wound with ether and she the bottle down my ear.
She what?
The bottle of ether went down my ear. Just poured it down. Be a German, the German nurse, you know. Just, you know.
Did she do it deliberately?
That's what I mean. Yeah.
What effect did that have?
Well, look, what could you couldn't do much about it, could you? You know, you just had to take it. No, you couldn't kick up a stink, couldn't, not really. But I told them, you know, didn't cut the lice. Anyway, I went from the hospital in Amsterdam, Dulagluft, which is in the interrogation department in Frankfurt. I was there approximately 4 weeks in a cell. You're in a cell with, say, another 10 or 15 prisoners of war, RAF. But you don't know they're all at RAF. It could be someone slid in there, like a German, but getting information from you. So you have to be careful. Everything you said. Well, the best thing is to say nothing. They sent me then, they went up to a room, well carpeted, a German WAF or ATS girl came along, took you up to this room, and they were interrogated. But this chap, a big chap, spoke perfect English, he's an Australian. Said he come from Australia. Perfect English. And they start with the old phrase, number, name and rank. Keep that. Then what aircraft were you flying? Can't give you that. No. And this went on for, you know, this went on for weeks, about 3 weeks. And where they house you, you put you in a single room of your own, and little shutters on the window, one window with little shutters on, wooden shutters. And this is approximately June now, July 44. And when the sun was out, they put the shutters shut them. And you'd be in that little room on your own. All you have is a bed and one blanket over you. And they weren't fussy about feeding you, nothing like that. No, just nothing at all, hardly. Get about one meal a day, soup. Say there about 3 or 4 weeks. And then he kept sending me the same old story. And as I was sitting in front of him at the desk, he kept writing TL down. And an E. That was in my ear cap, wasn't it? He wanted me to say something, obviously. So to get off the plane anyway. That's on the side of the plane. So in the end, I think they get fed up with you then, you see. They sent me then to a transit camp.
Did you tell them anything?
Nothing at all, just name, number and rank. They sent me to a transit camp about 20 miles southeast of Frankfurt. When I got to this little camp, transit camp, about 50 RAF air crew there waiting to go to a prisoner of war camp. But you see, you're not to know the RAF chaps. They want to shoot you. I'm stuck in there, you know, get information from if you can, you get in with you. Anyway, you get to know all this and lectures you give you on Pathfinder Force Squadrons, on how to behave, what to do, what to expect. One morning they came in, read 49 names off a sheet, and my name wasn't on it. You're going to love six harder crews. You lot. So I was wondering why they kept me behind. They wouldn't tell you, obviously. And all the lads were looking. They might have thought I was a spy, you know, finally. Anyway, next day, about 4 soldiers come, took me away, trains back, board interrogation.
Was that any different?
Practically the same. One important point I missed out early on, you'll put in somewhere. A Lancaster bomber, or a heavy bomber, holds 7 on the crew. This night we had 8. The wireless operator was a flying officer, Maskell. He went as a second bomber man. And I took his place as the wireless operator. I'd never known this before. So, strange crews, etc. In the end, flying officer Maskell got killed. He never got out, and I got out. Now, while I was thinking about this interrogation, he must have obviously knew. They found 8 bodies, hadn't they? With 3 survivors. And if 5 of the crew killed, there's 8. Why would 8 be in the crew? And this is my own interpretation. I don't even know to this day why. But the only my own interpretation is they found 8 bodies and only 7 in the crew. So one could be a spy. This is what they try and pin on you, see. Well, if you don't tell us this, where your squadron was and this and that, and one thing led to another, you could be a spy, we shoot you, you see. Now, this is my interpretation. They thought, as a spy.